Welcome to the Maddow Brothers audio series with Dr. Richard Maddow and Dr. David Maddow.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this month's edition of the Maddow Brothers audio series. I'm Dr. Richard Maddow, your host today, and we've got a fantastic guest, someone who has not yet been on the audio series, and someone who's going to talk about some things that I have a feeling will save you some stress. Can you save somebody stress? Well, they'll prevent some stress, save you some time, maybe save you some money and some headaches along the way, and give you some great advice so you can run your dental practice more smoothly. So it should be really, really exciting. Before we bring our guests on, I just want to remind you that these days, everybody's looking for some quick ways to get some cash flow into the practice, lower your overhead. If you are not recycling your dental scrap, you are missing out on just a really easy opportunity to bring some cash into the practice. And if you're recycling your dental scrap, but you're using one of the big companies that advertises in the journals with their four-page spreads, well, those companies have high overhead. And no matter what they say about percentages, they have service charges and all these crazy things. Bottom line is, check out Southern Dental Refining. They will simply give you more money for your dental scrap. And we've had some amazing results with our folks. So go to maddow.com/gold, maddow.com/gold. Find out how simple it is to get cash for your scrap. Well, it sounds like one of those cash for gold parties that people used to have, but probably a lot more legit. Okay, anyway, I am really excited to introduce you to this month's guest. His name is Ali Oramshian. He is an attorney, but don't worry, he's the good kind of an attorney, the kind who's going to help you, not the kind who's going to hurt you. He's one of the nation's leading legal authorities on topics relevant to dentists. He does all kinds of stuff with dentists. He's the founder of Dental and Medical Counsel, PC. It's a law firm, and they are regarded as one of the preeminent healthcare law firms. They work exclusively with us, with healthcare professionals. His clients come to him looking for advice on practice acquisitions and sales, creating corporations and partnerships, associate contracts, estate planning, employment law matters. That's what we're going to be talking about today, and probably more. Office leasing, state board issues. While he's a speaker on employment law negotiations, contract and estate planning, he's quoted all the time in journals. He's written articles for the California Dental Society, Progressive Orthodontist, New Dentist Magazine, and more. Spoken at the ADA, the CDA, the Hawaii Dental Association, Aloha, all kinds of other meetings. He's a lawyer who has a member of the bar in both California and Washington, D.C., but nowhere in between. So that's a lot of miles to cover. Let's welcome to the Maddow Brothers audio series stage, Ali Oramshian. How are you doing today, Ali?
Hey, Rich, I'm doing very well. Thank you for inviting me to come on, and thanks for that great intro. That's very kind of you.
Well, you're a really, really accomplished guy, so it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. No, this is going to be a lot of fun. And I love hearing about your music background. I wish I had learned how to play some instrument growing up. I tried the violin, and it just, I think I scared too many cats in our neighborhood. My parents made me stop quickly.
So. Yeah, violin's a great instrument, but it's really difficult. And, you know, you're younger than I'm. You're in your early 40s. So the music that you grew up with, you're not going to play that on the violin unless you really have a strong classical background. So
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's
my first instrument was piano. I started when I was 6 years old. And my mom says I was the only kid ever to beg for piano lessons. I think everybody else was forced to take them. But
No, that's awesome. Yeah, I think when I went to college, I really regretted not having a guitar. I can tell you that. So
yeah, that's funny. That I started playing guitar when I was in college. It was tough to carry a piano around, and just always fun to be the guy that brings the guitar to the party or the campfire or, you know, with the outing, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was great.
Exactly.
But also fun to be around those people. So, hey, now you went to college in my neck of the woods, right? Or was that law school? You were in D.C. for a period of time. Was that law school or undergrad?
It was my after law school, I went and got my master's in tax in D.C. And I was there at GW for a year, and then stayed there and worked for a number of years. And it was great. It was the East Coast and Washington, D.C. specifically. It was just amazing.
I love D.C. too. Just here from downtown Baltimore, I can be there in about 40 minutes. So I'm just picturing, though, you're there. You're a cool young guy. You're a lawyer getting a master's degree in D.C., which I believe has more lawyers per capita than any city in the world. I mean,
I think you're right.
Yes, so many great opportunities for attorneys in D.C., but you move back to California and become an attorney who specializes in helping dentists. What the heck happened to you?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like this is what happens to a lot of folks who kind of fall into the dental business. But for me, that's what happened. I kind of fell into it. I was, you know, working for a firm and doing sort of the big corporate law side of things. And then my wife, who had just finished her residency, and, you know, I started doing some work for her classmates and her co-residents. And I quickly realized, Rich, how much more fun I was having helping them than, you know, helping, you know, the Fortune 1000 companies that we were working on at the time. And it just kind of went from there. And it's funny. I always tell people the first year when I quit my job and opened the law firm, you know, just to focus on dentists, it was scary, you know, because I went from like a busy plate to, you know, getting one client a week, and then maybe, you know, it increased from there. And so there were quite a few moments when I was scratching my head, being like, what did I do? But you know, it quickly took off, and we've been really blessed because we've been really able to kind of put our spin on these topics that are most relevant to dentists. And the reality is, as you know, you're good at what you do, and everything else, you know, whether it's HR, which we're going to talk about today, and other things are just so foreign and so complicated. And so we try through education to really teach and help our dentists thrive by giving them, kind of a guidelines and best practices.
Well, that is fantastic. I've got to back up for a second. You really threw me for a loop here. Your wife is a dentist?
Yeah. She's a pediatric dentist here in the Bay Area. Yeah.
And what's her practice situation? Is she a practice owner?
She is. Yeah. She's a practice owner. And it's funny. She always says she feels like she became a better pediatric dentist when, we had our first child, because she could connect with moms better than she could before, because she was never a mom. And it's funny, Rich, I feel the same way, you know, ever since she started her practice about, you know, 15 years ago. I feel like I became a better dental lawyer, because now I see the stress that our clients go through when they're first starting out their careers. And, you know, there is this thing I write in the book I wrote, you know, a few years ago for young residents. I said, our first meeting with a dental CPA, which shall go unnamed, he told her she was committing financial suicide, Rich. Financial suicide by becoming a practice owner.
Wow.
And I sat there and I was like, what? That is a really bold statement to make to a young dentist who's just starting out. And I remember, and I was like, you know, I've got to help these young dentists kind of get empowered and start their careers, because one of the beauties of dentistry, unlike, you know, the medical field, for example, is that you can be a practice owner and you can have, you know, a good life, and you can have all the things that you want and still, you know, own your own business and be empowered and get to financial independence. It's not easy. It's a lot of work. Everyone knows that, you know, anytime you own a business, but you can do it. And to be told that was always kind of surprising. But yeah, but you know, she opened up her own, she opened up her practice. It grew. Thankfully, she ended up moving to a second location. Because she grew out of her space and, you know, has been doing well since. And so yeah, it's been quite the experience.
Well, that is fantastic. And as I'm sure you guys know, comparing a pediatric dentist to a pediatrician, pediatricians are pretty much, they're like puppets to the big groups and hospitals and insurance companies and cranking out, seeing so many kids in each day. So I think your wife made the right move. Now, we're like the opposite couple because I'm a dentist and my wife is an attorney. So if we hang out, we'll have some crazy conversations.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah.
Well, already your background is fabulous, and you must get a tremendous amount of insight being married to a dentist. And, you know, just hear firsthand about all the problems, not just legal, but emotional and patient care and all those things. So what a great background you have.
Thank you. Thank you. No, it's been a lot of fun. So
great. Well, let's talk about some HR today. And it's funny. I graduated dental school in 1984, did a residency, some horrible associateships. When I bought my practice in 1986, HR was not even an abbreviation I knew. I just knew nothing about HR. The most I knew is that you could go to some mail order catalog and buy an office manual that came in like a big 3-ring binder and supposedly customize it. We didn't know anything. Things have changed so much and we're so aware. And maybe part of that is because of some bad things, some lawsuits and legal wranglings, and dentists really need to know their stuff. But what's going on in HR now? Are things changing? Are there big trends in human resources that dentists need to know about?
Yeah, there are. I mean, you know, there's pre-COVID, there was just so much going on. Like you said, you know, people were really used to just ordering an employment handbook, getting it in a box. And what was funny was that, you know, our doctors sometimes would get sued or they would get in trouble. And I would ask to get a copy of their handbook and they would send me their box. And it still said, you know, insert name here and, you know, fill in this information. And the reason was is because they were just ordering it and the companies weren't really supporting them on getting it ready and getting it finalized. And so it didn't really do much, right? It didn't really do much for them. And now, you know, I think with COVID, you know, we've been really humbled with so much that has gone on with our teams and our practices and our own sort of personal lives. And I think our laser focus on the economics of our practices changed really rapidly to now focus on the human side of our business. And it's funny, Rich, from my first Facebook Live on March 16th to, you know, today, I've seen this transformation of our doctors where they went from, you know, being really worried about their employees and being really worried about unemployment and how they would, you know, survive with the office closures, to, you know, being worried about sort of FFCRA and all those things having to do with the leaves and the sick leave and whatnot. And then it changed to the PPP loans, and then it quickly changed to PPEs and how they nobody could get their hands on them, and then reopening again. And what it really has come down to is that the amount of communication, you know, being able to frequently communicate and clearly communicate to make sure that the business is operating, you know, well and efficiently with the entire team or most of the team there, you know, is crucial. And these are raising some serious legal concerns and really a lot of HR concerns. And the doctors who are now taking it, you know, more seriously than they had maybe before and are, you know, contacting HR for health and getting their HR house in order and doing all those things are the ones that are really have hit the ground running now that everyone's opening up again.
Well, let's talk about that. What are some of the HR concerns that have been raised? I don't want to use the term post pandemic. That's bad right. luck, but let's just say in the COVID era.
Yeah, I know exactly. So, I mean, as you can think, almost everybody finds HR unpleasant in any sort of normal sort of scenario. But what's really happened is that there's a couple of things that I think everyone's focusing on. One is on the health of the employees. I think now more than ever, there's a special attention being paid on the health of the employees and also the health of the patients, but really the health of the employees. And then creating engagement, right? Creating engagement with the team where there's real good communication about what's happening. And you're right. I don't like using that word either, the post-pandemic thing, because I feel like we're jinxing it. But you know, just during this new world that we're in, you know, how do we make sure we protect their jobs? How do we make sure the costs to the practice are, you know, either reduced or focused in a way that allows not only the employees to work at optimal levels, but also allows the practice to be, you know, working optimally for the patients. So you know, I think now more than ever, HR is becoming central to their businesses. They're focusing on paying their employees correctly, making sure the handbooks are drafted for them specifically, and it's available when they need to use it. And when you do those things, you know, you're really setting yourself up for success.
Now, you mentioned the health of the employees. That could be a crazy topic. And again, this is all so new. I don't even know if you have definitive answers to questions like this. But do you feel that from an HR standpoint, there are standards that we have to take so we don't get in trouble if something happens? An employee has COVID-19 and they're asymptomatic, and then another team member gets it or a patient gets it. These are crazy issues.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. These are really crazy issues. And what's happening too? Is that the law is becoming a little bit more flexible because they understand the need to try to control the pandemic really starts at the local level. Right. It doesn't matter what the federal government says. It almost doesn't even matter what the states say. It really starts at the local level. And at the local level, small business is really where everything's at, whether you're a restaurant, a coffee shop, a barber, you know, nail salon, or your dental practice. And so what they really want is that they want everybody to focus at the local level, you know, to take temperatures and to talk about COVID. And if you've been around, you know, someone who has COVID, whether it's a spouse, a family member, or just a friend, to really come out and talk about that and protect yourself. And you know, I think people who are taking it a little bit more seriously are handling it with a plan. And that plan has to be to take temperatures and just have open discussions where people feel like their jobs are safe. Because as you know, I'm sure you've had employees in your practice who, you know, always come to work, whether they're sick or not, because they're just good team members. But right now that's actually a detriment potentially.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, we used to be fond of, not that we wanted anyone to get someone else sick, but it used to be like something to brag about. Oh, my front desk person is so great. She'll come in even when she's not feeling well, but maybe not a good thing now. You know, it's funny, Ali, I live in a condo building, and when we leave the grounds, you have to enter through, you know, one door, whether you're coming in through the back or through the garden or whatever. And there are signs on every door saying something like, by entering through this door, you are waiving your rights to sue the owner of this building for COVID related. I don't know, man. It seems like BS to me. Do those signs even mean anything?
No, I mean, not really. A general waiver like that, no, probably not. I mean, it's kind of a silly thing to put in there. I mean, the reality is that, you know, this pandemic is not, it's not like HIV where you know where potentially you got it from, you know, and it's so hard to pinpoint, and it's so hard to know how you're even spreading it, because you could be spreading it without even realizing you're sick, right? And so you know, those kind of waivers really don't work, you know, at least not those kinds. We've had some of our clients ask for, and they've gotten waivers that they give to their patients and also their employees. Just kind of keeping everyone on notice that, you know, if they're sick, they need to notify them. If they're, you know, they shouldn't be coming in, that they're, you know, they may get, you know, sick in the office, to no fault of anyone. And those are good just for more information than anything else.
Got it. You know, it's funny. Yeah. We were kind of saying before how doctors find the whole term HR, the whole field, unpleasant. And I'm thinking maybe it's because when we think of HR, we always think of protecting ourselves from this, protecting ourselves from that, protecting ourselves from a lawsuit, from a disgruntled employee, blah, 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 blah. What are the most serious things that dentists should be worried about as far as exposing themselves to HR risks? What do we really have to be on the lookout for?
Yeah, no, it's you're spot on. It's funny, unless you're planning a career in HR, I don't think anybody finds HR actually pleasant. And you're right. I mean, you know, the reason a lot of dentists, you know, get in trouble with regard to HR is because, you know, you didn't go through all the schooling and everything else because you're passionate about HR. You did it because you're passionate about delivering, you know, amazing dental care to the patients and allowing them to live sort of healthier and better lives. And so the most common mistakes that we see kind of fall into a couple of categories. The first is something called wage and hour. And that means that, you know, you make mistakes in how you maybe pay for overtime, maybe, you know, whether you give lunches or breaks if you're required to, if you don't give somebody their final paycheck correctly. Those kind of things are kind of things that fall under the wage and hour protocol. And it's so common, right? It's so common, Rich, that insurance companies don't cover that. They specifically exclude wage and hour from their policies because it's such a common mistake that happens. So that's kind of the first category. The second category is when you let go of someone that you shouldn't fire. And if you've ever heard me kind of lecture anywhere else and talk at seminars, I always say there's three moments in like your career that you should never terminate somebody, and that's when they're pregnant, sick, and I say sick, I mean like disabled or injured, or older. And so, if your employees fit into those three categories, you've got to be very, very careful about letting them go because it's almost an automatic lawsuit. And that's the second category. That's what happens most often, right? If somebody lets go of a pregnant employee or someone who's a little bit older and they don't do the right things to protect themselves before they do that. And then the final thing is, the final thing is really more of an emotional, kind of reaction, but it's retaliation. And you can imagine, we've all been in that situation where, we're really, maybe upset about something at home or, maybe about something that's out of our control. And then something happens at the office and an employee does something that, wasn't good. And then we just kind of lose it and we do something, right? We fire them or we change their hours or we cut their salaries. We do something major to retaliate and we didn't really mean to do it, but it was our kind of our natural tendency because, something else was bothering us. And that is the third most common thing we see. And sometimes, it's hard for us to kind of go back and rewrite history. Yeah. So those would be the three top ones.
Kind of reminds me of the scene from the Jetsons where George pushes the wrong button and is, Jetson, you're fired. And then like the next like 2 minutes later, he's working there again. But
yeah, exactly.
So this brings up a few questions. The wage and hour thing, it's so funny here in Baltimore, as you probably have much more in the Bay Area, but it seems like every TV ad is an ad for a lawyer. And there was this real big malpractice, asbestos type, lawyer, and he started advertising for the wage and hour thing, saying like if you've been made to work from home, that could be the cause for a lawsuit. Yeah. If you've had to work on a weekend, if your boss asks you to do this, that could be cause for a lawsuit. What can we do to protect ourselves from that kind of stuff? You said that it's tough. Can you buy an insurance policy, or are there things that you can do to make sure that you're not doing anything wrong or prevent from a lawsuit when it comes to those wage and hour, lunches, breaks, all those things?
Yeah, no, you're hitting it on the head. Unfortunately, the insurance for the most part is really, really expensive. And so it's not really, a viable thing. I mean, we've seen insurance policies that, for, $250,000 coverage or $500,000 coverage, they're approaching 15 to 30K a year. And it's like, holy cow. I mean, that is a massive amount of money to spend just for some, some insurance. So what we, you know, what we have said is that the best thing to do to kind of minimize your chances, and we really talk about this in terms of risk profile. It's like, how do I reduce my risk profile, Rich, right? How do I make sure I'm not a big target? And I use this example. I say, you know, when you're driving on the freeway, for example, you know, how do you reduce your risk profile? Well, you could, you know, reduce your speed, right? You know, maybe you go to the speed limit. Maybe you wear your seatbelt. Maybe you buy a car with, you know, with, you know, airbags and other safety measures. We do things all the time to reduce our risk profiles. And when it comes to a dental practice and HR, the things to do are really kind of break down into a couple of categories. So the first thing is you want to make sure that 100% of the time you are accurately keeping track of their HR documents. So you want to make sure you've got all their new hire forms. And on average around the country, you know, it's anywhere from 12 to 18 documents that you need to have for every single employee. And so a lot of practices, you know, don't have more than a couple. You know, maybe they have the I-9, which is the immigration documents, and maybe the W-2 or whatnot for payroll, but they don't have anything else. And that really, especially now, you know, because of COVID, there's a lot of these, you know, documents that have become even more important because of the disclosures that are now required. So that's kind of category number one, right? Make sure you've got all of these 12 to 18 on average, you know, documents for every employee. Then it's really to track their hours correctly and tracking their benefits correctly. Okay. And this might seem a very simple thing, but it's actually a lot more complex than it seems. And the reason is because a lot of states now have, you know, sick leave laws that are based on timekeeping. There's overtime rules. There's other benefits that are tied to how somebody's salary or daily rate or percentage of production is paid out. And now with COVID, it becomes even more important because of the new rules, you know, that the government has passed with regard to payroll and tax credits and whatnot. And we see a lot of mistakes there because, you know, some people still use their, you know, dental practice management software for timekeeping. And it's not really meant for that. You know, it's really meant for practice, you know, management in patient data, not really for employees. And so that would be sort of the second category I would definitely fix. And then the third is, you know, once you've got kind of the documents, you've got the timekeeping and benefits figured out, and you're tracking that, you know, electronically. The third would be making sure you've got your employment manual, making sure you're adhering to it, and that you're doing everything you can to manage that well. And it's one of the reasons, Rich, why, you know, years ago we created HR for Health, so that doctors could go on there and basically do all the things we just talked about and much more directly on our platform, simply just to keep compliant, right? Just to keep compliant. And because there's no paperwork with our software, everything is electronic, so there's no chance of losing anything.
Well, since you mentioned it, let's talk about that just for a second if somebody wants to know more. Is that a website someone could go to?
It is, yeah. It's hr4health.com, and so HR and then F-O-R health.com, and they can get a ton of information out there. There's links to a ton of really great resources regarding COVID, you know, documents we've created, releases, you know, verifications if someone wants to be out on, you know, because of childcare issues. There's just a ton of free resources that we've put out there with no strings attached that your listeners can definitely go and access. And if they need a link, and, you know, I can give you the link to send out to folks, but it's, you know, our goal has been to really make it really easy to be HR compliant. And it's a small, you know, monthly fee that they end up paying, and they get everything, and they get a free employment manual as well every year.
Cool. Sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay. So we were talking about, or you were saying that if you need to fire someone, let them go, whatever the term is. Be careful if someone's pregnant, if they have a disability, if they're older. Now, of course, we all know that you can't discriminate against somebody because of sexual orientation or their race, their religion, whatever. And let's face it, you'd be a jerk to do that anyway, you discriminate against someone. So let's assume that our listeners are good people and they wouldn't do that, that they're going to, you know, work with everyone on their own merit and skills, which is the way things should be. But, mm-hmm. but here's my but. What if somebody who falls into one of those areas or classes is just doing a downright crappy job? What can you do?
Who's in a crappy job? The employee?
Yeah, an employee who let's just say you mentioned elderly. So let's say that you have and you mentioned pregnant. Let's say you have an 85-year-old woman who's pregnant. Wow, that would be crazy, right? And she's just not doing a good job. What can you do?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's hard. It's hard. There's not one single sort of answer to that. I can tell you that, you know, and it's funny, you kind of hit it on the head on this topic, because we always talk about how, you know, in dentistry, there's 100% employment, right? You know, anybody who is in dentistry who wants a job can get a job. I mean, there's no hygienist sitting at home saying, oh, I can't find a job, right? There's always a demand these days. So the question is, what if it's a good person, but the wrong job, right? Or what if something has caught up with them and they really can't do the job that they used to have or that they currently have and that was, you know, easier for them before. And the reality is that, you know, there's a couple of options. One, you could move them to potentially another position in the office that maybe is better suited for them. Sometimes, you know, if that's not possible, then working with them on potentially exiting the practice and through a severance agreement, you know, maybe you give them some money, 2 weeks, maybe a month's worth of pay, and then they sign a document that says, you know, they release you of all liability and whatnot. And the hardest thing, though, as you can probably imagine, Rich, is having these conversations, because no employee ever thinks they're a bad employee. Everyone thinks they're great, but they don't really see kind of what you see as a business owner. And sometimes having those discussions can be really, really difficult, because they mean well, they're trying hard, but they may just not be hitting it on the head, you know, when it comes to their tasks. And the older they get, or if they get pregnant or whatnot, it becomes very tricky to have these conversations, because you cannot bring up these topics as reasons for why they're not doing well, right? You can't say, hey, you're getting older and you're getting slower, but I need you to really work faster. You know, those are where things become problematic.
Right. Let's just say that you know, someone's just horrible with its software. They just can't learn it. They're horrible on the phone. They're not appointing patients. They're doing a bad job. But you think, wow, if I fire this person, I'm going to get slapped with an age discrimination lawsuit. You're almost stuck, or are you?
Yeah, you know, in many ways you are. Yeah, in many ways you are stuck, and you have to, you know, you have to have a plan. And every, you know, every situation is a little bit more unique. Like I mentioned, but you know, moving them to a position, doing the severance, or unfortunately maybe keeping them until they're ready to stop, maybe your only options. There is one other option that we sometimes talk about, but it's really difficult to implement, because you just have to be really, really good about doing this. And most of our clients, unfortunately, are not, which is, you could write somebody up for things that they've done wrong in the office. And as long as you keep it very objective, you could potentially let somebody go. But you and I both know that lawyer that you were saying, you know, is advertising in your neck of the woods, you know, the first thing he's going to say is, oh, that's a bunch of baloney. You know, they're just making an excuse to let this older, you know, employee go. You know, they've never written her up for, you know, being late, or they've never written her up for this or that. So,
right. Hey, hire the best people and do what it takes to train them well. Might be the good tip here.
Totally.
You know, it's funny. You go to the local dental study club and everybody's given their advice and their knowledge, and everybody thinks they know everything. One of the things that I remember hearing from a lot of people, now it's probably different from state to state, but people would say, oh, because I'm in Maryland. So, Maryland is a fire at will state. And if you have fewer than 50 employees, you can fire anybody you want and they can't do anything about it. Is there such thing as this?
There is, yeah. It's called called an at will state, and I think every state except one is at will. The problem, you know, the problem is that, you know, with the way the rules are and the way you know, the judges interpret these rules and the case law, it's really not at will. In other words, you really can't just let anybody go for any reason. You have to be, you have to be strategic, and you have to kind of think it through and have good objective reasons for letting them go. You know, in some situations you can, you know, you can, if you've got the, you know, if you've got sort of the perfect employee and you know, in terms of like age and you know, they've only been with you for a little bit of time and things of that nature, then the answer is yes. But you just have to be very careful.
Always be careful. ABC.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
It seems like laws change all the time, and we certainly as dentists can't keep up with them. Are there any recent law changes that docs need to know about when it comes to HR?
Well, you know, a lot of the things right now are really, there's a lot of things that are changing as of July 1 that are kind of more COVID based, if you will. But because it's a lot of these are very state specific, it's hard to, you know, kind of, mention those on a national kind of stage. So I don't want to misstate anything that someone, you know, for their state that may not apply. But what I would tell you is focus on the things that are happening right this second with COVID, because it is changing a lot of the current rules regarding, how you give leave to employees, which is under, you know, the FFCRA. There's a lot more laws being passed nationwide on equal pay and on, you know, the LGBT stuff, you know, having to do with, you know, who you can fire and who you can't. There's a lot more protections being put in statewide regarding sexual harassment training. So it's really important that, you know, everyone kind of keep an eye on their local rules. Of course, you know, I'm available. You know, if anybody has specific questions about their states, you know, the folks at HR for Health are available to answer any questions. No strings attached. We just want to kind of help and make sure you're on the right path. But there are, I mean, there's a lot of changes in the law that's happening as we speak.
All right, since you brought up sexual harassment, that could lead to so many questions. But again, it's the same thing. You know, you go to the local study club, somebody says, oh, you should never be alone in a room with a female employee, because if she says you tried to touch her or you know, if she says you asked her to stay afterwards for a little rendezvous, it's your word against hers, whether you did it or not. Mm-hmm. Any advice?
Right.
You never knew the interview was going to go to this, but any advice on these kinds of issues? They're tough ones for sure.
Yeah, no, they are. And, you know, Rich, it's kind of like anything else in our lives, right? You'd always have to just be careful, you know, like you said, ABC, right? Always be careful and just put yourself in a situation where you are, you know, aware of your surroundings and you're aware of sort of what can happen and who can say what. So you're exactly right. I mean, should you, you know, if you're a male doctor, for example, should you have a meeting after hours with no one there but one employee? Probably not, right? Probably not. Should you, you know, if you don't have glass on your doors in your personal office space, should you close it and lock it when you're having a meeting with a? Probably not. Just like you wouldn't necessarily do, you know, sedation on a female, you know, if you're a male doctor doing it on a female employee without a female nurse or a doctor or a assistant or whatnot in the room. Like, those are just things that we just wouldn't do. And I think sometimes with HR, we forget about those things. And so just kind of, what is the worst case scenario? And then just do things to protect yourself moving backwards from there. Right. And I'll tell you, and I hate, you know, talking like this because it makes me sound like a kind of a jaded lawyer, if you will. But I really am not, which is that, you know, I think that people are inherently really good. But I think there are people out there who are trying to take advantage of the situation. And dentists are easy targets for a lot of people just simply because you're busy. You're focusing on you know, a lot of things, and HR is maybe not, you know, at the top of that list. But that's where we come in, and that's where we try to help. So.
Yeah, well, I hope you do. And it's so funny looking back when I had my dental office, I cannot even tell you how many times I was the last one there, and there, you know, everybody would kind of straggle out one at a time, and I'd be there alone with a female employee. And I'm just so lucky nobody ever made any crazy accusations, because again, it would have been my word against theirs. So that's a situation you don't want to be in. Well, yeah. Speaking of overlooking things, what do you think are some things, or maybe some really simple things that docs might not really be thinking about, but we're overlooking when it comes to our HR compliance?
Sure. Yeah. So I would say, I would say if there's, if our focus is going to be to focus on the folks first, on our team members first, because the reality is that if we focus on the team members, they will take better care of the patients, which will eventually take care of the economics themselves. I would say, there's a couple of things I would do. One is try to centralize HR, right? So one person in the office is responsible for that. It might be you as the practice owner. It might be an office administrator. It might be an office manager. It might be your spouse, if that's the case. But try to centralize it in one person, and then use technology that's now available through HR for Health to simplify things so that you're not, running around trying to gather all the paperwork and do all that. And then I would say that's for compliance. That's kind of the foundation. Then it's a matter of using those same technological tools to grow the employees, right? Because the reality is that if you can be safe legally, great. But if you can now grow your employees with real-time data and information, and now they're working more efficiently, they're working better, they're working faster, they're focusing on the things that are important to you, then that just makes everybody's jobs easier as a team, and probably will increase your profitability as well. And so I would say, those two things are probably, the starting point of any good practice right now, especially if your listeners are sort of mid-career and they're at a place in their lives where they're looking at, 5, 10, 15, 20 years until retirement, and they're like, how do I get there and how do I do it well? This is sort of the way to do it, and to do it, safely, so that none of your, funds, if you will, your retirement funds and your assets get taken by some of these greedy plaintiffs lawyers. So
those greedy plaintiffs lawyers, we all know who they are. They
yes.
No, you don't have to pay anything unless we win. Right?
That's right. Exactly. People, right? Oh my gosh, it's like the bane of my existence. Exactly.
I think I was driving in Florida one time, and I swear there was a billboard from a lawyer on the highway. It said something like, "If you need money, come to me, and we'll find something to sue somebody about."
It might as well say that. Yeah.
So when you were talking about treating your employees well and fairly, this question came to mind. And I don't even know if you have an answer or if there's an official answer to this. But as somebody who has, I've been on the CE provider side of dentistry so many times, and people have asked me, if we take our team to a continuing education course, do we have to pay them? What do we have to do? And everybody has their own answers. Oh, if it's on a day they normally work, you do. But if you have to pay your hygienist the hygiene wage, nobody really seemed to know. Everybody makes something up. Is there any kind of, is this a legal issue? Is it just a rule of thumb, or is it just a practice management issue?
It's definitely a legal issue. Yeah, I know. It's definitely a legal issue. So here's sort of how it works. If you are, there's a couple of variations of this. Let's do the easy one first, which is, let's say there's like a lunch and learn in the office, okay? If there's like a lunch and learn in the office and a rep comes in and they want to show some product or some, technology to your team, and they bring pizza as well, and you require your team to be there to go through that lunch and learn, then you definitely have to pay them for that. Okay, you definitely have to pay them for that. Our recommendation, in order to not violate those wage and hour rules, Rich, that we were talking about, is to tell them to clock out for 30 minutes, eat their lunch, that the rep probably is providing, or the employees maybe have their own lunch, and then clock back in after their 30-minute lunch or whatever, the local lunch rules are, and then sit through the presentation. Okay. So, and that should be at their normal hourly rate, whatever they were earning in, you know, working normally, that's what they should be getting. And that's pretty standard, right? That's pretty standard. What happens, the mistake that happens is that people don't pay for that meeting because they go, oh, we're giving them lunch and, you know, it's just a lunch, normal lunch, and they're just listening to something, but that's under the law, that's considered working. So that they should be paid for that. Now, if they go to a CE event, you know, out of the office, you know, they travel to Las Vegas, you know, they go to, you know, Florida or, you know, New York or LA or wherever, then if they're traveling and it's a requirement that the office is asking their employees to go, then they do have to pay them for that. And it's really, they have to pay them from the time they leave their home to when they return back to their home, less, you know, the time that they're free to do their own thing or they're sleeping or and things of that nature. Okay. Now, one thing that most people don't do, which we recommend, is to have an hourly rate that is different from what they make in the office for those kind of CE events. So, you know, they might be making, let's say, $25 an hour, or you're a hygienist, you might be making $50 an hour. But when you go to one of these CE events, you know, there could be a secondary rate, which is maybe, you know, something slightly over minimum wage. And the idea there is that, you know, you want to pay them to go because you have to pay them, but you don't want to pay them $50 an hour to sit through a, you know, a seminar about a laser, for example, or to go to an event and get CE units. So you can have that differentiation.
I've never heard that before. That is such a fantastic tip. And I'm guessing that needs to be fully spelled out in your employee handbook, HR manual, whatever you want to call it.
Exactly. Yep, exactly. Yeah, it can't be done, you know, halfway there. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's funny, again, to bring up kind of a sub question, what about can you require your team members to take CE? Like, I know, you know, we were talking about before we went live, our TBSE event that we had in Las Vegas for 25 years. I know a lot of times people would say to me, I'm requiring the whole office to come, but Debbie doesn't want to do it. So now everybody's fighting and blah, 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 blah. I don't know. Can you require them to do things like that? It's advancing their education.
Yeah, no, I mean, you definitely can. And if you there's two protocols, I think, for CEs. One is some CEs are required for people's licensures. And then you could definitely ask them to get more CEs just as part of being, you know, an employee at your office. Both of those should really be paid for by you, because there are requirements that you're putting out there. If you've got an employee who's working and, you know, maybe they're a part-time employee and they're working for you a couple days and they're working in one or two other offices for a few days, in those situations, you may not have to, and you probably shouldn't pay for their CEs because, you know, they're not necessarily full-time with you, but it's probably generally good practice to pay, you know, the CEs and the continuing education for everybody else. Yeah.
I was always a big believer in it too. I mean, you know, we used to make a game out of it. If we had a great quarter or whatever, we go to a better course instead of just the local yokel course. It could be fun. So it should always be fun when you learn, I always think.
Yeah.
What do you say, like, to a doc that says, you know what, I've got so many things to worry about. I just don't have time to even think about HR. Now, I know you've got some great resources that we've already recommended and you can talk about again, but what's really important for the doc to be doing on a hands-on basis when it comes to HR so they have a great team and they stay out of trouble?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, the minimum stuff, absolutely the minimum would be make sure you get the new hire documents, the 12 to 18 that we were talking about. Make sure you get an employee handbook that's updated, especially, I mean, it's important every year because so many rules change every year. But now it's even more important because of all the changes regarding COVID and whatnot. So make sure you get an updated 2020 employment manual. And then document everything that happens. You know, document everything that happens so that no one, you know, can say something different than what actually took place. And if you don't document, you know, people are always under this false, you know, belief that they'll remember things in the future. And we all know we don't remember anything, you know, and you know, time passes and, you know, we forget the details. And so it's important to document.
I just I was reading something. I think it might have been with Penn Jillette from Penn and Teller about some research that even when we are 100% sure that we remember something so clearly, chances are we're actually getting it wrong. I thought that was, he phrased it much more eloquently and quoted a study, but I thought that was really fascinating. So
I know what you're saying. I mean, I have ideas all the time. And as someone who has put on major events, Rich, I think you probably would agree with this, that you're probably resting at home or taking a walk, and then suddenly some great idea pops into your mind that you want to do at your next event. And if you don't write it down right there, you just forget. You know, you just forget. And I'm the same way, which is, you know, I'll have a great idea and I want to write it down because I don't want to forget it. And if I don't write it down, other things happen and it's very hard to remember.
But hey, these days with our smartphones, it's so easy to just do a fast dictation. So we have no excuse anymore.
Totally. Yeah. 100%.
Do you use your smartphone for dictation?
I try to. Yeah. I've become better and better at it. You know, ever since this whole thing happened with COVID in March, you know, we've been getting inundated with thousands of emails and questions, and I've loved it because people have really, you know, taken the time to ask questions about these things that are happening instead of guessing. And I have found myself dictating in the emails in my phone and then sending it off as opposed to typing. And I get so much more done by just dictation. So
you get so much more done, but the person has no idea what you're talking about when they read the document because the dictation translation is so bad. But
sometimes you're right.
So I'll put you on the spot and you may not have an answer for this. And if you don't, it's fine. But I'm just thinking, can you think of a real life example where a dentist got in trouble or went through some hardship or just was hassled somehow because of something that they did or didn't do, where if they had followed good HR protocol, the result would have been better, if that question even makes sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, there are so many examples of this. Let me think of a good one. I would probably say, you know, I'll tell you one that actually happened in February, right before all this craziness, and it was it kind of breaks your heart because I had a doctor who sold his practice He had been in practice for about 28 years or so, and some of his employees, and this one in particular, had been with him for almost the entire time. I mean, not exactly, but like 20 some years as well. Okay. And he really considered them family. I mean, he bought gifts for their children, and, you know, when their children had kids, you know, he would, you know, buy gifts for those children, and he would give them, he would just spoil his team beyond belief. And, he sold his practice and almost immediately got a letter from a lawyer. And this is now late February, early March, right before, you know, all the shutdowns happened. And the letter basically was from a lawyer saying that the employee was going to sue because he terminated her unlawfully. Now, the reality is that it holds no water, right? It holds absolutely zero water. Why? Because he was selling his practice. He had to legally fire everybody, and then the buyer would just hire everybody back, right? But when I called the lawyer to kind of impress that upon him, what he told me was, he said, look, you know, the issue here is that this employee feels deserted. She feels that she had been with him this entire time, that she helped grow this practice, that she did everything that he wanted to get him to where he wanted to be, and yet he's able to retire and she's not. And she felt like she just abandoned him, right? And you know, we haven't heard anything since this because COVID hit and, you know, all this craziness happened. But I'm fully expecting this thing to, you know, rear its ugly head. And I don't know what the end result will be. You know, there might be some money exchanging hands and whatnot. But what it brings to the forefront to me is that communication is really key. And you know, it was very uncomfortable for him to want to talk about the sale of his practice once everything was done, but he didn't do that at all. And the employees found out through the broker and they found out through the buyer. And that was just a really bad way of ending a really great career with really great team members. And so what I would say is, you know, it's not your typical situation. It's not your most common situation. As we've talked about today, there's a lot of other kind of scenarios that are more common that happen. But I can tell you that, you know, it all starts with communication and documentation. So,
I mean, it sounds like she almost wanted alimony, like dentimony.
Yeah,
from
but
this
pretty
guy.
Much. Yeah.
You know, it's, and could he have done anything differently to have prevented that? Not that he did anything wrong, but could he have done anything differently?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the only thing that would have been to take the time at the very end to have a conversation with the team, and especially, you know, the employees that have been with him the longest, and just kind of smooth things over and make sure they understand the reasons for his decisions and all those things. Sometimes it's just about that, just feeling like they need to know, right? Just feeling like they need to know what's happening, That's sometimes just all it takes is just, you know, they don't expect a lot. They just expect just a little, but enough to feel good.
So. You know, it's interesting. When I sold my practice, I remember the broker and my attorney and everybody saying you absolutely cannot tell your team until settlement, because if they find out you're thinking about selling and they leave or they do something crazy, and then the new buyer at settlement can claim, well, this is not the same practice I'm buying. You had a great team. Now half of them are gone. So I couldn't tell them, or that's what I was told anyway. And it was a horrible moment when I had to come in one day and say, hey, next week I'm going to be introducing you to Dr. Schum, and he's the new owner of the practice. I felt like a jerk. But
right.
HR-wise, though, is that the correct thing to do?
Well, I mean, no, I agree. I mean, you don't want to say anything during the negotiation process or whatnot, but you want to leave enough time from when those documents are sort of signed and ready to go and the closing, so you do have that conversation, and that part is important.
Yeah.
I don't think they should be surprised, but once everything is done, then it's a good time to say something. And honestly, it allows for a smoother transition to the buyer, right? And the buyer should want that too, as long as it's done, you know, kind of well. So.
Right. Well, and that little story brought up another point too, and we've got to close out pretty soon because we're almost at an hour here. But is it problematic when the doctor and the team get too close, like you describe them, like family? Should the doctor, in retrospect, never have gotten that close with the team member?
Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, yes. But you and I know we're in a service business, and you know, there's a lot of relationships and things. And it's hard, right? It's hard to keep it at arm's length all the time. But I mean, technically speaking, yes, that is by far, you know, probably the best thing to do.
Okay, so I am not a fan of the term the new normal. I can't stand it, actually. But I think it's tough to avoid it, because that's what we're in. Let's face it. Nothing is the same. It's crazy. We've never seen anything like this. It is the new normal, as much as I might not like that term. That's what we're going through. So we've got doctors. They're leaders of the practice. As we like to say, they wear so many different hats. As we're adjusting now to this current era, and we're talking about, you know, we were in crisis mode for months, but now it's time to start thinking about our long-term business growth again. Have things changed, and what should we be focusing on now?
No, I mean, I think focusing on the employees and focusing on their health and focusing on our own health and the patients are probably the things that have changed a little bit more than ever before. I think we all know that. Well, let me take a quick step back. Rich, it's funny, when this whole thing was happening during COVID, the thing that the people were most stressed out about as they approached the end of the closures was the unknown of whether patients were going to come back or not. Okay. And And everybody was afraid of that. You know, are they, you know, there was all these articles in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal about how dentistry is so risky and there's all this aerosol and droplets. And people were worried that the patients wouldn't come back. Well, the offices opened up and the exact opposite happened. Patients just, you know, ran back to their dental practices. And we've had more clients tell us that they're over 100% of their normal in production than ever before, right? Ever before. I mean, so it's not a patient issue. It's a PPE issue because there's not a ton of that around. And then also it's an employee issue because employees are either not coming back or staying on unemployment or they're afraid of COVID or any number of things related to that. And so I think, you know, making sure you're communicating well, making sure you are have the protocols in place and you're doing all the HR things we've talked about is going to set you up for success. And I don't think outside of that, I don't think there's much else we can ask anybody to do, quite honestly.
Yeah, it's tough when you have a team member who doesn't want to come back or they're not ready to come back. Can we hold that against them?
I mean, you know, under these scenarios, I it's hard to, right? It's hard to because for a lot of folks, you know, COVID is a real serious risk to, you know, not only themselves, but maybe a family member who's immunocompromised. Maybe they're taking care of a relative who's immunocompromised. We don't really know. I think the people that I have the least sympathy for are the ones who are not coming back because of unemployment, right? And, you know, and what I mean by that is they're getting, you know, a good amount of money from unemployment and they're not willing to come back to work because they would just want to, you know, milk unemployment for as long as they can. And that I'm not okay with because there's a lot of people out there who need care, dental care, and that can't be provided unless there's team members in these offices. But for people who are really scared of COVID or they have a family member that they're trying to protect against or maybe they've gotten sick themselves, you know, in those situations, I wouldn't hold it against them. I mean, it's just the new reality we're in.
Right. And from an HR standpoint, would it be a risky move to dismiss someone like that?
If it's just for unemployment, no, it's not risky. I would want you to, you know, call me before you do anything, but you know, somebody who doesn't want to come back because they're getting more unemployment. No, you can terminate them. You know, someone who, you know, is not coming back because of childcare or because they've gotten sick or someone they know has gotten sick. It could be a little bit of a different story. So I would definitely want, you know, you to chat with me and do a consult. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Ali, believe it or not, it's been an hour. I cannot believe it. This has been fantastic, interesting, fascinating. You're a really enthusiastic and knowledgeable speaker too. So I'm sure all of our listeners will appreciate that. Now,
thank you.
I don't know if you have any closing words, but what do you want to wrap this up with? And please tell everybody how they could find out more about what you're doing, about how could they could utilize hrforhealth.com if they want.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, and it's been really fun, Rich. I've done hundreds of these since March, and I'll tell you, this is the most fun that I've had. So I appreciate you, and I appreciate you, you know, inviting me to come on. You know, what I would say is, I don't want anybody to ever feel like they're alone during these crazy times. So if you have any questions about HR questions, about practice transition questions, you know, let's say you want to sell your practice or you're worried about coming back to the office, don't close down your office. There's a lot of young dentists out there looking to buy, and so just reach out to us. We'll get you connected with them or others who could help, you know, buy your practice. And what I would say is just contact me. You know, my office number, I'll give it to you now. And so you can always reach out. It's 925 area code 999-8200. Again, that number is 925-999-8200. So feel free to call anytime and we'll schedule a time to chat. If you're interested to learn about HR for Health, you know, I would say either, you know, call or email me or just go on their website and somebody there will reach out to you and see if it's a good fit for your office. But But I hope your listeners know they're not alone. We're here to help, we're hoping to, you know, take the guesswork out of these complex HR topics.
Yeah, and you know, as I always say, don't do things yourself. If you're a dentist, you're wearing enough hats already. You need a great insurance person. You need a great attorney. You need a great attorney who's an HR specialist. You need a fantastic team. So if you want to take advantage of the great skills and knowledge of Ali Aramchian, please do it. And I'm even more impressed that your wife's a dentist. You're an insider.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we do have to wrap it up, but thanks for that nice comment. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure. So for Ali, I'm Dr. Rich Matto. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening to the Matto Brothers audio series, and we will see you next month. Thanks so much to our special guest.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Matto Brothers audio series. For more information on how we can help you become more successful in your practice, be sure to check out www.matto.com. You are no longer alone.